Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And today is Monday, September 17th, 2007, and I have a question for you. Have you ever been to Las Vegas? That's where I was this weekend. And I had an interesting odyssey. So I didn't go out there to gamble, although I did manage to sit down and drop a little bit of money at the blackjack tables. And I didn't go out there to party, although I got together with some people I know. I went there for a boot camp. I went there for a speech boot camp. Those of you who are regular listeners know that I not only teach public speaking at George Mason University, but I am a student of public speaking myself and am working to improve my public speaking. So I've been a member of Toastmasters for going on 3 years is all. But I also get some coaching from some high-powered professionals, people who have each won the World Championship of Public Speaking. And this weekend, not only was I coached by Darren LaCroix, the 2001 World Champion of Public Speaking, and Craig Valentine, the 1999 World Champion of Public Speaking, I believe. Craig being one of his expertise being storytelling. This was a storytelling boot camp. But I met Patricia Fripp. Patricia Fripp was there coaching us this weekend. Now, this is a high-powered professional coach. And I have to tell you, I have such a soft spot already for Patricia Fripp. She is an amazing woman. She has phenomenal energy. She's one of the most highly paid professional speakers out there and one of the most highly paid professional speech coaches. And as near as I can tell, the best speech coach out there. So the world champs go to her for coaching, and she has joined them in their ventures when they try and train some of the rest of us that are looking to get better. And so that's what I did in Las Vegas this weekend. Also, we had a couple of nice experiences. One was that O.J. Simpson got arrested while I was there. Now, that's not the nice experience, but if you heard about O.J.'s arrest, it happened in Vegas this weekend, or this last weekend. And I don't want to talk about O.J., but I do want to talk about a show that I saw. Now, the last time I was there was 9 years ago. It's been that long. And Vegas changes a lot in a few years. They are constantly blowing up old hotels. And old means 20, 25 years. It's like dog years. You know, in Vegas years, 25 years is an ancient hotel. Because the real estate's so valuable, and they're always looking for the bigger, better deal, that they blow up perfectly good hotels to put up more elaborate and more ornate and more exotic casinos and hotels. So at the time I was there 9 years ago, the Paris was just going up. They were building the Eiffel Tower at the time. That's what I remember. And of course, that's long complete, as are a number of other casinos. And when I went 9 years ago, I just flew in and out of Vegas. I did spend a couple days there, but I was headed for the Grand Canyon. I did the culmination of a lifelong promise to myself, or a 30-year promise to myself, that I would raft down the Grand Canyon. The very first time I went to the Grand Canyon, I saw that they had mule rides, and I thought better of that. We walked into the canyon and out. But I learned that they did raft trips through the canyon, and I said, someday I'm going to do that. And so in 1998, I guess it was, I rafted through the Grand Canyon and flew in and out of Vegas. But that's the last time I was there. And I remember the last time I was there, my friend Sonia, who lives there, got us tickets to see the Pretenders at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. They've got a big venue there. And she had hotel connections, so she got us fourth row seats for the Pretenders. And then we also saw Mystere, which is one of the Cirque du Soleil shows. And so this time, we went to see, I say we being the whole group that was in this boot camp, this speech boot camp, we went to see an amazing comedian. We went to see Vinnie Favorito at O'Shea's Casino. Now, our class was actually held in Vinnie's lounge. One of my coaches, Darren LaCroix, he started before he broke into professional speaking and won the world championship of public speaking. Darren was a budding stand-up comedian in the Boston area. And one of the coaches that took him under his wing was Vinnie Favorito. And Vinnie taught Darren a lot of valuable lessons, including stage time. Get yourself out there and practice, 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 because that's the only way you get better. Well, Darren arranged to have this two-day boot camp. Usually we're at a hotel in a conference room. He arranged to have it taught in Vinnie's lounge. And so Vinnie's got a lounge that seats, I don't know, 150, 200 people. And he got us tickets for the Saturday night, one of the Saturday night performances. And what's unique about Vinnie Favorito, and I highly recommend him to anybody that goes to Vegas, first of all, it's not a $120 show like the Cirque du Soleil shows are, or like Celine Dion or some of these other talents, or some of the other comedians that are out there. He's about a $45 ticket and worth every penny. He had us in stitches. But he's a unique comedian in this regard. Vinnie talks for about 10 minutes, you know, does a normal stand-up routine for about 10 minutes about what an honor it is to be the headliner at O'Shea's. It's a small casino tucked between the Imperial Palace, where I was staying, and the dump next door. No, the, I forgot what was next door. It doesn't matter. Harrah's, I guess. And Vinnie does about 10 minutes of stand-up, and then Vinnie goes into his main routine, which is he works the crowd, and he introduces people in the crowd. He asks people in the crowd, so what's your name, and where are you from, and what do you do? And when he finds something out about you, he pokes a little fun at it. Now, he's a bit of a blue comic, meaning there's some racy language in there, so I'm not going to play you any of Vinnie's CD on the air. It would probably be banned from public access airwaves. But he is hilarious, as long as you don't mind a little colorful language. And he has a photographic memory. So what he does is he was talking to this couple down front. The wife was, what did she say? She said she was a nurse's aide. And he said, oh, so you're not smart enough to be a real nurse. Huh, honey, that's too bad. And then what about your husband? It looks like he could use a little nursing care yourself. Shelley, you fallen asleep there? So he introduced Shelley, the guy who was a little older and accused him of falling asleep all the time. And so then he went around the room and he introduced, he met everyone else in the first three rows and started giving him a hard time in a good-natured way. He has a broad smile on his face. Vinny's an Italian, if you hadn't guessed, from Boston, and has an edge to him. So he's pretty funny, but his secret is he makes connections. You know, I think it was Mark Twain who said that humor is the juxtaposition of two ideas that before they were put together were not perceived to be funny. So Vinnie will hear somebody else that's doing something. They're also from Jersey, or they're from the Midwest, or they do something in their line of work. They're in sales, and he'll tie it back and say, oh, well, maybe you should be talking to Shelley. And, of course, I'm not being very funny here, but Vinnie had us in stitches. And because he has a photographic memory, he can move around the room and make associations back to the people he's already talked to and go back and make those callbacks, as they're called, all through the show. And so part of why we were there was for the educational purpose. I don't want to lie. Darren had us there to hear how good Vinnie is at comedy. But an important part of professional speaking, public speaking, is callbacks. So the idea is when you've made a point in the course of a speech, or maybe in the radio show here, a callback would be where if I've already talked about something that's happened in the news, I call back to it later in the show and make that association. So a quick-witted comic or a fast on his feet or her feet public speaker can make those connections, and Vinnie is a master at the callback because he's got such a great memory. Anyway, that was well worth doing. We had a good time. And all in all, a fun weekend. So I came back this afternoon and went straight to my Toastmasters Club, in which I applied my storytelling boot camp and gave a speech, a storytelling speech, and then I came straight here. So let's dive into the rest of the week and what's happened in the news. I may get to storytelling if it's not too boring and we have time. But let's go into a little bit of what's going on in the world. One of the things that's going on is that Hillary announced today that she plans to give us national health care. Now, I believe the way she's wording this is that everyone will be covered. You'll be required to have health care. You'll be required to get health care, purchase health care, and if you cannot afford health care, one will be appointed for you. Now, that's the law about lawyers. What do we call them? Public defenders. No, but the idea is if you like the health care you got, you get to keep it at the price you're paying. If you can't afford health care, you will buy it, and the government will help subsidize it, whatever that means. Now, I haven't heard a price. I haven't heard a lot of stuff. I haven't heard all the critics yet. But Hillary has stepped out front on health care, which is huge because, of course, one of the things that people still point to is the fact that in 94 we had a bit of a debacle over health care when she tried to do too much too fast and was accused by Harry and Maude of other people, those two characters in those old ads, of trying to wreck a good system. And of course the conservatives and Republicans think she's a socialist. We don't have many socialists in this country, folks. Let me let you in on a little secret. We are all capitalists. The issue becomes, what do you think you should be left to the markets, and what do you think government should do? And everyone has certain things they think government should do. No one is a complete free market person. If so, we would have police and fire and the military handled by the private sector. Of course we don't, because some things we insist be handled for the common good. And so the debate is, to what extent should healthcare be a right or handled for the common good? You know, regardless of what you think of Michael Moore, he makes an interesting point in his movie, Sicko, which is that you wouldn't privatize the fire department, right? Because then what happens is they're watching the profit margins, and the accountants are saying, you know, we shouldn't put as many people on this truck to go to this fire because it's running our costs too high. And Michael Moore, in his movie, interviewed people whose job it was at certain healthcare companies to deny benefits. They got bonuses, and they were given pats on the back if they denied claims. Said people couldn't have an operation, people couldn't get reimbursed for this or that problem, illness, operation, because it adds to the bottom line. And his point was, imagine if we fought fires that way, or had our police departments operate that way. They'd be making economic decisions and saying, you know, let's not send as many police out patrolling tonight. Let's not follow up on this. Let's let that building burn to the ground. It'll be more economical long term. Now, plenty of parts of Michael Moore's movie Sicko are a bit ridiculous and get carried away, and he's very selective in his use of evidence. I know all of that. So if you are out there listening and you're a Republican or a conservative or just somebody that finds fault with anybody who's a 20%er, left or right, I understand that Michael Moore's movie is far from perfect. The only point I'm making here is that when it comes to health care, people automatically assume in this country, a large percentage of people automatically assume that the free market can handle it just fine. But what we know is that the free market's job is to reduce costs and increase revenue. And so if you have a profit motive, which there's nothing wrong with, you are going to need some checks and balances in something like healthcare, because otherwise people will just deny benefits and increase premiums to increase profits. And of course, that's not going to work long term. So we'll talk a little bit more about politics, I'm sure, although I'm not going to spend a lot of time on politics, and I think I'll move on to some lighter stuff for a minute, and then we're going to have to get back to the whole issue of terrorism, if not Iraq. I hope not to have to give you the double whammy tonight, but we're still pretty much hot on the heels of the Petraeus testimony of a week ago. And there's some news out here about the trying to re-up the warrantless surveillance law that was rushed through Congress before the Republicans got tossed out in the elections at the end of 2006. So let's listen to a little bit of the Rainmakers, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about whether we got a Rainmaker solution in the war on terror. Hey, we are back on the Andy Finn Show, and I want to talk a little bit about some of the miscellaneous news that's out there, some of the interesting things that, before we get into the heavy stuff about war, pestilence, and warrantless surveillance. Actually, we'll probably skip over pestilence this week. We'll stick with war and warrantless surveillance. But first of all, here's a little urban legend action for you, and it's so new it hasn't even made it onto Snopes.com yet. But there is a website out there called MarryOurDaughter.com that you shouldn't get too excited about because it is a fake. Basically, things are out there like this. The parents of a 15-year-old daughter, whose name is Rachel, says that, quote, being married is her daughter's only career. The only one she's interested in, and so they are seeking a man willing to marry her, and you can have her in marriage, again, keep in mind this is a 15-year-old girl they're claiming, for the low, low, low price of not $25,000, not even $20,000, but $19,995. A 15-year-old, okay? And then Kristen, who's 16, has a wild streak, but she recently decided it was time she settled down with a man who could meet her need and help her fulfill her dream of being an actor or singer. Her parents are trying to sell this fiery daughter for just under $50,000. At least that's the claim at marryourdaughters.com. Well, the site has produced all this email and 20 million page views in the last 2 weeks, and it gets thousands of emails a day, mostly angry people who are outraged that parents would be out there, quote, selling their daughters. And, of course, the site is a prank. And so the creator of the site has basically been masquerading as the publicity director, Roger Mandervin. And he's a science fiction editor who's done other pranks and urban legend things before, including urban nudism. And basically, he was, I don't get this exactly, but he's trying to draw attention to inconsistent state laws about marriage. And so they're trying to get people stirred up, and of course it works. On the internet, you can always get people stirred up. There's always people willing to believe something that somebody writes, no matter how weird or strange it is. And it looks like that's what's happened here. In any case, let's move on. A couple of things that you students out there may be interested in. The first is a new study about sleep. It turns out that a lack of sleep hurts your performance. Now, most of us might assume that that's true. We might assume we know that. But in fact, there have actually been a couple of studies recently of college students which show that when you pull all-nighters, it's not an effective way to study. Now, I've been telling my students this for years. My brother Dan, who teaches at St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota, gave me this advice years ago. What he tells his students is that working out your brain is like physical exercise. A little bit every day makes you stronger, and so a little studying every day makes you stronger, but trying to do it all in one day just makes you sore. So that pulling an all-nighter is not the way to go. And I often have students say when they come to me, you know, 3 days before a paper's due or a week and say, Dr. Finn, I'm trying to narrow down my paper topic. And I'm like, you haven't chosen your paper topic yet? And they say, well, no, I've chosen the topic. I just need to flesh it out. And I'll say, no, you haven't written anything though, right? You haven't outlined. You haven't done the research. Well, no, but I'm going to work real hard. I'm going to, the next few days, that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to pull an all-nighter. And I'll say, that is not the way to approach college. And they say, you don't understand. I work best under pressure. And I say to them, no, you simply work more under pressure. And that's essentially what this study shows. These several studies show is that college students seem to think it's a rite of passage to go ahead and pull all-nighters. But in fact, it turns out, this one study shows that came out of, where did this come out of? St. Lawrence University, that your GPAs are slightly lower for people that pull the occasional all-nighter. Now, I don't know how strong that correlation is. This is just a simple summary of that research. But there's also a Stanford University study that suggests that when it comes to student-athletes, because that's who they studied, they should get more sleep. And of course, if you're working out strenuously in an athletic program, you're probably going to need, your body's going to need more sleep anyway. But basically, the study shows that when it comes to athletes, if you get more sleep, your performance improves. Now, what's interesting, of course, is that athletes pay all kinds of attention to nutrition and to working out with weights or something. They don't think about their sleep habits typically, and that can make a difference. And then finally, there was a study that came out recently in the journal Sleep that looked at a relatively small sample of adults, and they tested their heart rates. And basically, when you get 10 hours of sleep versus when you get some four-hour chunks of sleep, the adults who had little sleep at night, their heartbeats are faster the next day, and they have less variability in their heartbeats. And variability is usually considered a sign of a healthy interaction between your heart and the rest of your body or your brain. So that it suggests that sleep deficits can actually stress the heart significantly in just a matter of a few days. So the advice is get a full night's sleep. Don't be pulling all-nighters. Don't be cramming a lot of work in at one time and then trying to catch up on your sleep later. Just do it regular, do it steady, and that's your best bet. The other thing that I found recently, and this was in today's USA Today, you know how it is. You're on an airplane or you're in a hotel. You get access to USA Today. But this talks about textbooks. Now, I'm always on the student side when it comes to the price of textbooks. I think they're too highly priced. The current ones that my students are using run in the high 80s, about 80. One of them might be 84, one of them might be $88. And it really is two books combined in one. So it's not an outrageous price. But still, it's a lot of money for students, and they'd rather not pay it, obviously. Also, the other thing that textbook publishers are doing now is they're trying to kill the used book market. They're trying to make it so students have to go out and buy the books new each time. But get this. There's this article cites a sampling of the prices on certain new textbooks in college bookstores. And so without mentioning the school, let me mention the topics. And let's start at the lowest. Advanced Econometrics, only $74. Dynamics of Leadership, $85. But Fundamentals of Building Construction, the textbook, the new textbook is $110. Quantitative Chemical Analysis, $130. And the granddaddy of them all, Business Law and the Regulatory Environment. And I suppose there's a lot to say about that. $154 for the one textbook. Now that seems a little high to me. But basically what the article is about is because prices have gone up so much, theft has increased in bookstores. And, you know, if somebody can get away with grabbing a book, putting it under their shirt, or however they get it out of there, you've stolen a pretty expensive item. It used to be, you know, a VCR or a stereo would cost that much. Not a stereo, but a piece of a stereo equipment might cost that much. Now, the textbooks are more than a VCR costs. You can get a VCR for $49.95, a hi-fi VCR. And if it breaks, you throw it away. It isn't worth fixing. But the textbooks, black and white print, the old technology is very expensive. So they've come up with different ways to limit theft by putting students' names in them when they buy them, putting things in invisible ink in them, only having certain days you can return these things so that, because what's happening is they're showing up on eBay or people who aren't students are coming, you know, are stealing them, like a student leaves it somewhere or sets it down for a minute, and they come back into the bookstore to resell it, either as a used book or if it's new enough to return it. And people can tell these folks aren't students sometimes, but they've got the book, so they return it. So they're working on all of that. But my students will be glad to hear that, because I don't blame them, but they gripe about the price of new textbooks. And while we're on books, let me move on to the issue of audiobooks. Actually, you know, I think I may wait. And, we can cover this in just a minute. So, let me move on to the issue of audiobooks. It turns out that the company eMusic is jumping into iTunes arena in one area. eMusic is primarily a song downloading site, but they are going to start offering audiobooks. Now, if you order audiobooks through iTunes, they are, how do I put this? They use typically a technology known as DRM, Digital Rights Management. Basically, it's a copy protection scenario where you have to pay the copyright fees before you can make a copy of it. So basically, it makes things uncopyable. Well, eMusic doesn't do that. So they are now going to start selling these audiobooks in MP3 format, which means it'll work on any digital player. Currently, if you download these kinds of things from iTunes, they only work on an iPod. And they've got DRM, meaning they're copy protected, so you can't just make a copy and move it to a second device for your own use because they're worried you're going to give it away to somebody. and it prevents this unlimited duplication thing. And so in iTunes, you can only burn these items onto a CD once, and they can't be transmitted over the internet. And so it's true that because eMusic doesn't have piracy protection, no major music labels have signed on, and only a few of the audiobook publishers have so far, but the site is pretty popular. In fact, it only has 10% of the music download market, while Apple has about 71%, but it sells twice as much as the other competitors. Right, Apple's way out in the lead here, but Napster, Rhapsody, Walmart.com, it's selling more than any of them. And so it's going to be interesting to see what they do with these, how they do with these ebooks, because they're offering them at almost, at about half the price of iTunes. So we'll have to see how that fares, how that comes out. But let's take a break at this point. And when we come back, we're going to move on to the whole issue of warrantless surveillance, because we got a little law that was passed by the Republican Congress in 2006 that is coming back for renewal and, frankly, coming back to haunt us.